Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Love steadies. Free throw is up. It is good. And Arizona has a four-point lead. 2.2 seconds remaining. Evans to inbound. Evans will throw it into Biddle. Biddle from half court at the buzzer. It is no good off the front of the rim. And the Arizona Wildcats are back in the Sweet 16. Arizona defeats Oregon. 87-83 is the final. And for the third time in 4 years under Tommy Lloyd, the Arizona Wildcats are going to the Sweet 16. Arizona wins the matchup of former Pac-12 rivals as they down the Oregon Ducks. It'll be Arizona against Duke in the Sweet 16 in Newark.
Second straight year, the Ducks tournament run ends in the second round, just short of the Sweet 16. Judah Newby, Stephen Vaughn in for John Canzano, back here on the Bald-Faced Truth, 750 The Game, BFT Radio Network. Spencer McLaughlin does podcast work with Locked On College Football, also Locked On Ducks. Had a good episode that came out with a reaction out of this game. He also writes at 750thegame.com. His post is live now, saying that Oregon basketball was really close, but they will still get even closer. Spencer joins us on the show. Spencer, great to talk to you. How are you?
It's another day, another postseason letdown for the Ducks, unfortunately. And, you know, I try to be optimistic in these moments because I know consciously that better days will be ahead. It's just got to wear on Oregon fans at some point that it's just, you know, another, like, it's just a familiar cycle at this point, right? Go through, have a really good season, be good to elite, and then suffer a postseason disappointment and go back to the offseason. You know it's going to go well, and Dane Altman's got a lot of work ahead of him to, you know, get this team back to a tournament level. I mean, they just had their highest seed since their Final Four run in 2017 when they were a 3 seed. They're losing a lot. And, you know, there's work to be done. But, to answer your question, guys, I'm familiar.
I think we may have lost him. Or Spencer, are you still there? Can you hear me?
I'm still here. Are okay. You still there?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
We're still here. We're still here, surviving good. I will ask you this, though. And Oregon looked so good against Liberty. And Arizona looked so good against Akron. It really looked like those were kind of messages sent toward one another. Like, hey, man, we're not going to get upset. We want to face you in the second round. The Ducks wanted Arizona. Arizona wanted the Ducks. But then Oregon got off to that such a good start, Spencer. Was there a part of you just thinking that, hey, this is the Ducks' time, and they're just clicking at the right time?
I saw that lead get out, but I was certainly encouraged by it. How could you not be? It was, you know, a rerun of the Liberty game. They got off to a hot start. The defensive energy was great, and they were hitting shots, and it was coming from a variety of places offensively, you know, led by Shellstad, but other guys were getting in the fold. And that's when Oregon's been at their best is, you know, it's not just Jackson Shellstad getting in any action. You know, when Oregon made that, the last time they were in the Sweet 16, you know, they had this other kid from Westland who's turning out to have a pretty good career in the NBA. And when Pritchard got hot, it felt like he was kind of the only guy that could really be carrying the Ducks offense. I felt like this was a much deeper team, a much more collaborative team offensively. And, you know, when they're firing on all cylinders, they can score at three levels. And Bamba was getting inside. Shellstad's hitting threes. Bartholomew is hitting shots amidst mocking guys on the other team for shooting air balls. So, you know, I felt like they had that going against Arizona, and I knew the Wildcats were going to make a run. You know, against Liberty, I thought, boy, I just don't know. They can't rebound against the Ducks. They're too small. They look slow. They went on a long trip to get to Seattle. For the Ducks, it was a short one. And against Arizona, you knew, you know, I know Oregon had the 15-point lead in just a few minutes, but when you're going up against a team as good as Arizona, you know they're going to make a run. If you watch enough college basketball, you know, that's just kind of how it goes. So certainly I was encouraged by the start, but never for a moment did I think, oh, Oregon's just going to go beat Arizona by 30. I knew they were too talented for that.
Do you think, because in football, I felt like being in the Big Ten really helped out Oregon, like the perception of Oregon nationally. Do you think being in the Big Ten helped out Oregon's perception nationally on the basketball level as well?
I don't know that it made a huge difference necessarily. I mean, certainly they had a good season, and you know, they were in a Big Ten conference that we're seeing in the NCAA tournament is really good and has been good the last couple of seasons. Of course, they made up a quarter of the Elite Eight last year with Purdue and Illinois, and you know, Michigan State is still in the fold looking really good. I know Illinois lost to Duke, but I think that for Oregon basketball, because they didn't win either the regular season or the conference championship, I don't think it was quite the same sort of statement, but certainly I do think that within the Big Ten Conference, they have to be looking around and going, hey, I don't think this 66-year-old coach in Eugene's going anywhere. I think he's going to stick around and be able to compete year in and year out, and that's my expectation. I think that's the expectation of Oregon fans, and it certainly should be. But, you know, I think going in and winning the Big Ten in football in year one, I think that had greater ramifications than Oregon going into the Big Ten and having a good year, as they certainly did, and getting bounced in the round of 32, if that makes sense. So I still think Oregon had a really good year. It's just, you know, unfortunately for Duck fans, it's another postseason disappointment where you look at it and go, that could have been a lot more. And, you know, that's happened twice this year, but all you can do is go back to the drawing board and figure out how to make the most out of next season.
Talking to Spencer McLaughlin here, Locked On Ducks and 750thegame.com as well. We were talking expectations for Oregon basketball, and it might be one of those things where it's a fun radio topic. Like, what should expectations be for Duck football? What should they be for Duck basketball? Do fans have high enough expectations? Do they react appropriately enough for those expectations? With men's basketball specifically, Spencer, what do you think the, you know, annual expectation is among the fan base, and is getting to the second round and being kind of spicy and feisty and almost getting to the Sweet 16, is that quote-unquote good enough, or how do you kind of view expectations in this new world of college basketball with as it relates to Oregon?
Well, if you look hard enough in any fan base, you can find every end of the emotional spectrum with regards to any team. You know, they should win the national championship every year to, hey, I'm just happy to be here. This is great. I remember when Oregon basketball never made the tournament, right? You know, that's a, I think, generational thing. And, you know, the energy for basketball at Oregon is not as high as it is for football. I hope that it can continue to grow. And I think being in the Big Ten can help with that. I think it can also be a detriment in some ways. You know, lack of familiarity. I think the matchups with, you know, not familiar traditional teams in conference play, maybe that had a bit of an impact on the attendance at Matthew Knight Arena. But on the flip side, you know, when you bring a Purdue or an Illinois to town, I think that adds a lot of juice. Or, you know, whenever Wisconsin rolls through as a Big Ten game, I think that's, you know, just kind of something that's interesting to look at for Oregon sports in general. But, you know, I look at what the Ducks are going to be able to do in the years to come. There's no reason, you know, for football, they shouldn't be in the playoff every year. I don't expect to win a national championship or even be at that level every year. Heck, I don't expect that from the football team next year. And plenty of Oregon fans disagree with me on that. That's okay. That's what the offseason is for. It's for us to just yell at each other through keyboards. But I think for basketball, you know, Dana Altman has reestablished the standard. Like, you know, you take a step forward last year, making the Pac-12 tournament run and getting to the round of 32, and, I mean, they should have beaten Creighton. Even more than they should have beaten Arizona, they should have beaten Creighton. They had a four-point lead with less than a minute to go, and they had the ball. And, you know, as I watched this season play out, I think that game in particular was about not having Keyshawn Barthelemy. I think if Keyshawn Barthelemy's in that game, I think Oregon's to the Sweet 16, maybe even to the Elite Eight. Perhaps not beyond that, but I think they were missing just one other kind of offensive weapon to go with Cousinard and Dante and Shelstad, who was a true freshman. But, you know, I think the expectation now, you know, you go from making a magical run to firmly getting yourself into the tournament, your highest seed since 2017 when you went to the Final Four. That next step depending on how the offseason goes, is, hey, can you get to the second weekend at least next year and not just get there and get blown out? But, you know, one of the reasons I was disappointed they couldn't find a way to beat Arizona was, you know, did I think Oregon could win a national championship? No. Did I know that 100%? No, because it's college basketball. Crazier things have happened. But I wanted to see them get a crack against Duke and see, okay, this team had so many things to like about it. You know, whether that's the Shelstad's growth, KJ Evans' progress, Nate Biddle playing at a high level, didn't have a great game on Sunday, but, you know, bringing in TJ Bamba and Brandon Angel's veterans, like, they had a lot of things going for them, and we saw that throughout the year. But Duke looks like a legitimate number one seed. I don't know if you guys saw what they did to Baylor in the second round, but I think it violated the Eighth Amendment somewhere. So I think that for Oregon, it's how do you take that next step? How do you put yourself in that upper echelon again? And I wanted to see how close they were to a number one seed like Duke and, you know, see if you could push them and have a chance to beat them. And unfortunately, we'll just never know.
Well, how do they take that next step? Because I think for me, it's you have to have Shelstad back for sure. I don't think it's 100% he's coming back. And same with Biddle. Like, what else did the Ducks need to be able to get to the second weekend and not only be, you know, just at the second weekend, but actually compete during that second weekend?
Yeah, I think it has to start with those two guys. You know, I'll toss KJ Evans' name in there as well. I mean, his progress throughout the year was profound and a great development for Oregon, not just to have depth, but, you know, as you look ahead to the future too. I mean, Brandon Angel continued to start because that's what coaches typically do, but who was on the floor at the end of games? KJ Evans. And you can get caught up in who starts, but who played more minutes? Who was on the court when it mattered most? The answer is KJ Evans. And I mean, his ceiling is so high, but his offensive game is still, I think, at least one offseason away from being an 8 to 10 point a game scorer. I think he could be a, you know, 12 to 15 point a game scorer, but that depends on a number of factors. But, you know, you look at what Ohio State football did this past year and, you know, their NIL collective. Yeah. They went out and paid for a couple of guys in the portal who were huge to get them to a national championship, like Will Howard, the quarterback, Caleb Downs at safety, and Quinshon Judkins at running back. But a big storyline around the Buckeyes was, you know, they took their NIL dollars on the football field and invested it into keeping their guys and bringing them back for another year. So, you know, we'll wait and see what Nate Biddle does. I really hope that he comes back. We'll wait and see what Jackson Shelstad does. I really hope that he comes back. I think you have to start there, while simultaneously you have to figure out, hey, we're losing Brandon Angel, TJ Bamba, Keyshawn Barthelemy, and Supreme Cook off the bench as well. Where's that replaced production going to come from? Do we have guys on the roster who can fill that, or are we going to have to go? And I think you're going to have to get contributions from them, but Oregon's going to have to go out and hit the portal. They've got one recruit coming in from the high school ranks, and I don't know that, you know, they have massive expectations for him. So I think Oregon's going to go out and portal really aggressively. I mean, you talk about Angel at 7 points a game, and you talk about Barthelemy at, I think he was 8 or 9 points a game, Bamba 10-point a game score, and Supreme Cook, who I thought did a lot of really good things off the bench. Like, that's a lot to replace. So they have to simultaneously establish the core that they have for next year, but that will also impact their portal moves and how aggressive they want or need to be. I think they should be aggressive every year, of course. But, you know, if Nate Biddle decides I'm going to the NBA draft, well, now you've got a massive hole. You've got a massive hole. Or Shelstad decides to go to the NBA draft. Well, that would be a massive gap to try and replace immediately in 1 year. So I think your first focus is get those two guys and KJ Evans back. You've already heard that Bam Tracy and Jamari Phillips are going to return. Phillips didn't play a ton this year, but could have a huge role for the Ducks next year, I think, coming off the bench as a scorer to replace Barthelemy's production. But there are a lot of questions, a lot of questions about, you know, what guys are going to do and then what that leads to with regards to their portal moves. Because if one or both of those guys don't come back and decide, hey, my draft stock's where I want it to be, then you've suddenly got big, big gaps to fill. But I think your number one priority is, hey, those are your two best scorers. You got to find a way to get them back and keep them on campus.
Spencer McLaughlin joining us, Locked On Ducks, 750thegame.com. Mentioned Oregon football a couple of times throughout. I wanted to ask you about that quarterback situation, Dante Moore, Austin Novosad. How much of this is performative in your mind, this quote-unquote QB battle, and how much is valid? And if it is going to be Dante Moore, does it benefit the Ducks one way or the other to announce that in the spring or wait till the fall to try to keep Novosad around?
I don't think there's a rush. I don't know what the benefit would be, you know, to try and find a guy in the spring portal or before the spring portal window. I've gone back and forth on this because Dante Moore, from a trajectory standpoint, should be seen as the front runner. I get that because a guy of that caliber doesn't transfer to Oregon with the express intent of sitting behind a veteran. I don't think he does that without some kind of guarantee from the coaching staff, you're our guy for next year. So that's the thought I have on the one hand. And Dante Moore has a higher ceiling than Austin Novosad as a quarterback, but let's also not pretend he's some slouch. You know, he was committed to Baylor. He flipped to Oregon. And if you notice, guys on the football field have announced their intentions to transfer, and Novosad hasn't done that yet. So, you know, those are kind of the competing thoughts I have. You know, the expectation and the bigger name and all that stuff leads to people thinking about Dante Moore. But if he is truly locked in as the starter, is Novosad wanting to be a backup? That's not why he went to play college football. He's plenty talented. We saw in the spring game last year, he made some high-level throws across the board, all over the field. He did a lot of really good things. And so I think that my initial reaction was Dan Lanning's just giving us coach speak. You know, if they knew Dante Moore was a starter, do either of you guys think that Dan Lanning would have told us?
No, exactly. Yeah, it's gamesmanship and strategy is part of it. But I think Novosad's probably a smart guy, too, and he can read between the leaves.
Yeah, I think so. And so on the one hand, we wouldn't know. But on the other hand, it could be a genuine battle. Because what's the downside to making Dante Moore, you know, push himself to be the best version that he can be? Because remember, he got benched at UCLA because he kept throwing the ball to the wrong team. So he has to, I think, constantly be thinking about, and I think he does, based on how he talks, and, you know, I've talked to him before, going back to his time in high school. I think he's got an incredibly good head on his shoulders and has that kind of cerebral quarterback vibe. And I look at what he can bring to the table, and he's got all the traits, ability, and all that sort of stuff. But him being in a place where he has to outcompete somebody else, I think is only good for him because of how much growth and development that he knows he needs. That's why he came to Oregon, to grow, develop, and be pushed. So I want to say, oh, it's Dante Moore, Novosad's got no shot. I mean, it could be. We'd never actually know. You'd never get a straight answer from Dan Lanning about that sort of thing. But I do think there is something to, well, if that's the case, why is Novosad still here? You know, what's he waiting for? Maybe he thinks Dante Moore is one and done to the NFL after the season, and then Novosad's the guy in 2026. I think there are a lot of different ways that could play out.
Spencer McLaughlin, Locked On Ducks, Locked On College Football Podcast, and also contributes at 750thegame.com. Talking a little Ducks basketball as well with us. Spencer, appreciate your time as always, my friend. Thanks for your stuff on the site, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Anytime, guys. Good to talk to you.
He's the man, Spencer McLaughlin, here on The Baldface Truth. Jude Anubi, Stephen Vaughn, in for John Canzano, 750 The Game in the Baldface Truth Radio Network. I want to react to a couple of things he said on that quarterback front. Plus, we will power rank all the Sweet 16 matchups in the final hour of the show. We'll also get you the 5 at 5, 5 big things going on in the world of sports. But up next, Blazers and Celtics yesterday, and Peyton Pritchard got his first start of the season. What he said about it, and what's next for the Blazers. You got Jude Anubi, Stephen Vaughn here on The Baldface Truth.